I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on King MOX.
Always helps turn the mic on into our second hour. It is Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. As always, if you want to chime in, you can do so by calling, texting, tweeting. If you call or text, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. And you can leave a comment on the video chat as well if you happen to be watching us on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. The news of the day from a baseball standpoint, Derek Shelton has been hired as the Minnesota Twins manager, the former Pirates manager. I just saw something that Jeff Jones tweeted out a little while ago. He had tweeted out that if Shelton had not gotten a managerial job this year, that he could have seen a scenario where Shelton ended up working in St. Louis in some form or fashion, has ties here, knows Chaim Bloom evidently well. He and Oliver Marmol evidently are friends based off what Jeff said. So I guess in a roundabout way, there might have been a St. Louis impact. I'm going to be curious with Shelton, because one of the things I always like to see is when managers are in places. Okay, let's do the Skip Schumacher thing. And it's not a total perfect analogy, because Schumacher did have some success with the Miami Marlins, more success in one of his years in Miami than Shelton ever had with the Pirates. But it's one of those places where you're not expected to win, right? You're not given the resources to win in a Pittsburgh, in a Miami. And both those managers were considered to have done a very good job with what they had to work with. I do think it was time for Pittsburgh to make a change. Like, that was for the lack of success that they had under Derek Shelton and him being there so long. At some point, they needed a new voice. They got a new voice. I think Kelly did a nice job there, and he got the full-time job following the season coming to an end. But I'm always curious to see what it looks like when a guy who is considered to have done a good job at a place where it's hard slash impossible to win, what it looks like when they go somewhere else. And generally, that exact description would apply to Derek Shelton. Well, here's the problem. He's going somewhere in Minnesota that gives you a little bit more of a chance to win than what you have in Pittsburgh, but not a great chance to win. That's a team that a couple years ago is in the postseason, and then they go into the offseason just looking to slash payroll. That's not a great situation. So I don't know how much better it's going to be for him. And then the other Major League Baseball managerial news coming out today is that Albert Pujols had a count 9.5-hour meeting with the San Diego Padres. What? I would love to have been a fly in the wall on that one. 9.5. You're talking about a lot for 9.5 hours. If you're Albert Pujols and you don't get that job, it's like, I had two interviews and the second interview was 9.5 hours. That could have been an email if you were not going to hire. That's a long, long interview. He was going to be in Southern California anyways. He is on coverage for MLB Network. He's been doing pregame stuff for the World Series tonight. But yeah, 9.5-hour meeting, according to multiple reports. That's sort of the news of the day. Derek Shelton, former Pirates manager, taking over in Minnesota. And man, you would think that after a 9.5-hour meeting, at some point in time during that 9.5 hours, AJ Preller or somebody else was thinking to themselves, you know what? Pujols just isn't the guy. They could have gone ahead and just ended it right there. The old whelp, and started to stand up like the Midwest goodbye. They could have done that. They could have given the whelp. There was no whelp given, evidently, or it came 9.5 hours into the meeting. So I saw this just a few moments ago. This is what I've been wanting to talk about. This is crazy. And maybe it's not crazy when you think about it in terms of the state of Louisiana. I'm not trying to take a shot at the state of Louisiana, but it's a unique state and they do things their own way. If you haven't heard, there's a college football coaching vacancy in the state of Louisiana that's kind of a big deal after LSU fired Brian Kelly. So the governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, and let me be very honest here before we go any further. I don't know a whole lot about Jeff Landry. I don't know a whole lot about the political situation in the state of Louisiana. I know it is a right-leaning state. But beyond that, the exact details of it, I don't know a whole lot about it. But this is what happened today. So Jeff Landry is the governor of Louisiana. He was doing a media conference, and it was connected to everything that's going on right now with the government shutdown and state-funded assistance going away and all that sort of stuff. Somebody asked him about his role in the firing of Brian Kelly, and he did have a role. That's been well reported that as LSU and everybody was going through the process, because there's a lot of money that's going to be owed, that is owed to Brian Kelly, that the governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, was in on the conversation. So Landry was asked about who's going to make the hire on the next head coach. And the athletic director at LSU is Scott Woodward. And generally, an athletic director is the primary decision maker when it comes to bringing in a new football coach. Sometimes the university president will be involved in that. Like if Eli Drinkwitz is to leave Missouri this year, Laird Veach will, the Mizzou athletic director, will be involved in that. But the administration at Mizzou, I'm sure they will have a voice as well. It's not a singular decision being made by an athletic director, but the athletic director has probably the largest voice in much of that conversation. So Landry was asked about LSU Athletic Director Scott Woodward and what role the AD at LSU is going to have in hiring the next football coach. This is real. I read this and it almost seems like it's something that should come from the Babylon Bee or something. The governor of Louisiana, when speaking about LSU Athletic Director Scott Woodward, said this. This is a quote. I can tell you right now, Scott Woodward is not selecting the next coach. Hell, I'd let Donald Trump select the next coach before I'd let him do it. That would be like Mike Kehoe being asked about if Eli Drinkwitz were to leave Missouri. And for some reason, somebody's talking to Governor Kehoe about it. That would be like Kehoe saying, I could tell you right now, Laird Veach is not selecting the next coach. Hell, I'd let Donald Trump select it before I let him do it. This is real life. If I'm Woodward, I don't want that job anymore. And I know that's really easy for a guy hosting a sports radio show in St. Louis, Missouri to say, and there's not a whole lot of power four athletic director jobs available. But if I'm taking strays from the governor and the governor is telling me that I cannot do my job, that's an issue. I guess Landry also, so this press conference that, again, was supposed to be about SNAP benefits and government shutdown and all that sort of stuff, it just absolutely devolved into a football conversation. So that's all the governor really wanted to talk about, evidently, today in Louisiana. Said, quote, we're not going down a failed path. This is a pattern that got us here. The guy talking about Woodward that wrote that contract cost Texas A&M $77 million. Right now, we've got a $53 million liability. We're not doing that again. What that was in reference to is Woodward was the AD at Texas A&M who signed Jimbo Fisher to a 10-year $75 million contract in 2017. However, that contract was then extended by his successor at Texas A&M. That should be clear. That turned into a 10-year, $95 million contract. And then Fisher was fired in 2023 and had 77 fully guaranteed $1 million left on his contract at that point in time. But this is just wild. This is wild that this has happened, that the governor of Louisiana is talking this way about an athletic director at a university. And I am speaking here on this topic, admittedly, with a lack of depth of real information on it. Like, I don't know the dynamic between the governor and the university and all of that. I don't. And maybe I should learn a little bit more about that before talking about it. But I just saw this just moments ago, and I could not believe when I see the governor of Louisiana talking that way. But, you know, in most states, especially in most SEC states, the highest paid government employee ends up being the football coach. And that's football runs so much. Like, football is overly important. And I'm not saying it's not important. It's just we're at a place right now. We're seeing sports and politics, and this is not a political show. I'm not trying to go down that path right now. But we see sports and politics colliding more and more and more and more. Like the other day, there was a fake tweet that was sent out, the social media platform that Trump's on? I don't even know what it's called. The one that he created. Somebody created basically a fake social media post from him, where it said that he was not going to invite the Dodgers or the Blue Jays to the White House, no matter who ended up winning. It was totally fake. It wasn't true. He didn't say that. But it was believable, right? Like, you see that, and it's believable. And more we're seeing the intersection of sports and politics. And these coaching searches go along with it. Because when you've got a government employee that you've got to pay $50 million for them to go away, that has to be something that crosses the desk of somebody in government at some point in time. And a lot of these coaches, you know, most of these athletic departments now are their own corporations. They're independent totally of the university and the money that's coming in. But it's not, there's still a little bit of a connection in all of that. A quick update, by the way, a wild, wild, wild start to the World Series. It is currently in the top of the first inning, and the Toronto Blue Jays are leading this game by a 2-0 score on back-to-back home runs to start the game. The first batter of the game was Davis Schneider. He hit a home run, and then a moment later, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit a home run against Blake Snell. And it's just not going overly well for Snell here at the moment. They are out of the top of the first inning, but the Blue Jays do lead by a 2-0 score. So if the Blue Jays were to win tonight, that would allow them to take a 3-2 series lead back to Toronto for game 6 and 7 if needed. But they very, very, very good start here for the Toronto Blue Jays against the Dodgers. Coming up in just a moment or so, we are going to hear from Jim Montgomery. He is the Blues coach. He spoke with the media earlier today. I thought he had some really interesting things to say. We'll hear that coming up. And then later on, we are going to hear from Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, the weekly conversation he does with our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. That's all coming up here on KMOX.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. And my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Welcome back in. It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly as we continue to take you until 8 o'clock this evening. While the struggles, they are absolutely continuing for the St. Louis Blues. They have lost five straight games. They lose yesterday to the Red Wings by a 5-2 score. They're going to get back at it coming up tomorrow night when they match up against the Vancouver Canucks. Blues head coach Jim Montgomery met with the media today, and the Blues also announced earlier today that they are bringing up forward Dalibor Dvorsky from Springfield. He has played in six games for the Thunderbirds this season, leading the team with three goals, has 5 points overall, and somebody who certainly has a very, very bright NHL future. So an exciting moment for him, as it looks like he's going to be given a real opportunity here moving forward. We'll see what happens when Robert Thomas is back, but this certainly feels like an opportunity for Dvorsky to get here and make an impact. And when Montgomery spoke with the media today, let's actually start with Robert Thomas. He gave a bit of an update on him.
Doing better. He's on the mend. Taking the steps to be a player again, but doubtful for tomorrow.
So Thomas not available tomorrow. So when we go to what that means for Dvorsky and what he's going to bring to this team, Montgomery is very excited about what that might look like.
You know, when you first get in the NHL, you realize how grateful you are to be in the NHL. You're in the best league in the world. Everything is the best. The way you get treated, Enterprise Center is full. You're playing in front of electric fans. You're playing against the best players in the world. So the natural energy that a young player brings energy to the group. And then if we're looking specifically at the player, his offensive skill set and his shot that can beat a goalie at any level from distance is something that is always beneficial to have in your lineup. He's playing tomorrow night. And he's going to be on the power play tomorrow night. He's going to be a center.
Montgomery does admit that Thomas's injury does contribute to the motivation to bring up Dvorsky and also to be playing him at center.
Well, it factors into it for sure, because, you know, there's an offensive element that we're missing that we usually have that, you know, so he can supply that. Now, it's a complete team effort by all our centers and who ends up low to replace what he does for us offensively and defensively combined. It's not just on the young man.
Centers in the Blues system are asked to do a lot. Sometimes it's a bit more complicated than some other systems out there. And Montgomery did say that as Dvorsky gets here, it might take a little bit of time for him to acclimate to being a center in the system.
Well, you got to get the repetitions, you know, like, there's patterns in the game of hockey. Even though it's a fluid game, there's patterns that happen. And the more you see the patterns, the more muscle memory and your brain sees it, and the quicker you play. So, you do need the reps, but we also have players, defensemen and other wingers that can help him. You know, he doesn't have to be the low forward every time.
All that being said, a couple very important things when it comes to the Blues right now and getting production and hoping to get some production from Dvorsky. Montgomery says that he really comes in playing very good hockey.
That he's been very effective on the power play, and that these last three games have been his best three games that he's played. So he's feeling good about himself. He's making plays. He's scoring goals. He's doing the things. And that's why he's the guy that's called up.
And we can talk all we want about his shot and what he's going to do and limitations and being young and like anything that you want to throw from a negative standpoint. Maybe the biggest positive here is Dvorsky. With his shot, he can absolutely score at any level.
It's definitely something that he can provide, because that's the strength of his game. If you just look at him offensively, his release, his shot, to be able to beat people with a one-timer or a snapshot is something that's the best part of his offensive game.
A few more things from Jim Montgomery. Again, the Blues losing yesterday, and they've got a record of 3-6-1. I thought this was really good. Of everything he said today, this was most interesting to me. He was asked, you know, sometimes as a team, you might have some bad luck. You might look at your record and say, you know what? We've played better than the record would indicate. Sometimes it works the other way, too. Sometimes you look at your record and you say, we probably don't deserve that record. Well, the Blues, 3-6-1, obviously not very good. Montgomery was asked if he felt like the record represents who they are and the way they've played this year, and I thought his answer was really, really interesting.
I think it's fair. I don't think our process has been good. You know, we're not defending the good ice. We're giving up too many grade A opportunities. We're not giving up a lot, but the ones we give up are like five bell chances. Like Albert Pujols is staring at a softball and he's knocking it out of the park. We got to stop that. The other part is game management. We're not managing games, and it doesn't matter the situation. It could be in the offensive zone, we're not managing the puck well enough. It could be in the neutral zone, you know, our support isn't where it should be. It could be pulled goalie situation, we're trying to make rink-wide passes instead of gaining the red line and rimming it in. Those are game management situations that we have to be more prudent in, to give ourselves opportunities, and doesn't matter the situation. The other night in Pittsburgh, we're delayed penalty, 5v6. It looked like we had never played that situation before. You know, those are guys having to take a breath, protect the middle of the ice, and then run your routes properly so that you kill plays and whatever, or make plays.
From an offensive standpoint, the Blues are not scoring enough goals, but that doesn't seem to be the biggest issue on the team. But every night, it feels like there's a goal or two that's left on the table. Sometimes there's some opportunities right in front of the net that they are unable to convert. And Montgomery spent some time talking about what they need to do to be able to start converting those type of goals.
That comes into two areas. Puck from behind the net has been an issue for us, and just having more patience, one guy going, not two. And then the other area is coming in the D zone, stopping in good ice. It's something that we, again, this comes down to coaching, and it comes down to us harping on the details and the players executing it. You know, so those are areas that maybe we haven't done a good enough job harping on. I know we have started harping on it quite a bit. But then you look into the, you know, players wanting to do too much because they want to be difference makers, and they don't stop, they run. And that exposes the good ice. And we just got to trust everybody to do their job.
We can talk all we want about what they're doing from an offensive standpoint. The struggles here are coming from a defensive standpoint. As every single regulation loss that they have this year, they have lost by at least three goals. Their last four games, they've given up 5, 6, 6, and 7 goals, respectively. They are just giving up a ton of goals. So it shouldn't surprise you too much when Montgomery says that the team's struggles right now are really based off what they're doing defensively.
I don't think offensively is the issue for us. We're 29th in shots for, but when you look at analytics, we're in the top 10 offensively of slot shots and creating high danger chances. So that's not our focus, is on the other area. The other area, we're like 5th in shots against, but yet, like I said, we're not protecting the good ice. So if we protect the good ice and we continue to get the same offense, we're going to win hockey games. We just got to get better without the puck.
So that presents the question, how do you get better defensively? Montgomery's got a lot of confidence that they can get better and they can get back to being the team that they expected to be pretty quickly.
It's something you get back real quick, you know. Now, as a staff, we got to do a better job of hammering on the details of it. Stopping at the house, protecting the good ice, protecting middle ice, protecting the net front. Those are things as a staff we got to help give those players so that they play faster within that structure and have confidence in it.
Good stuff from Blues head coach Jim Montgomery speaking to the media earlier today. Again, the Blues will try to end their 5-game losing streak tomorrow night. They are going to be at home at the Enterprise Center against the Vancouver Canucks. We will take a break. We'll come back and we'll hear from Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, his weekly conversation that he does with our sister station in Kansas City. We'll hear that coming up in just a few moments as we roll on with the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
It's the Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, continuing to take you till 8 o'clock this evening. The Kansas City Chiefs, they got another win this past week. They knocked off the Washington Commanders 28-7. They have now won three in a row and five of their last six, and they've got a huge game their next time out as they are going to match up against the Buffalo Bills. That's going to be coming up on Sunday afternoon, 3:25 kickoff. You can hear it right here on KMOX. It is time to listen in to our weekly conversation that Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes has with Carrington Harrison at our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. And as Carrington Harrison opened up the conversation day with Mahomes, as they generally do, they start off with a lighter topic, talking about how the Mahomes family handles trick-or-treaters on Halloween.
Most time we are the trick-or-treating, just with the kids and stuff like that. So while we're doing that, we usually put the bowl of candy out on the front patio or the front porch, whatever you want to call it. And so that's how we usually roll with it. And by the time we get home, it's usually all gone. So I don't know if that's one person taking it all or if that's a lot of people coming by the house.
What kind of candy are you guys divvying out? Are you guys getting like king size candy bars? Are you getting like those little variety packs and just, hey, you can grab a handful of it? How are you guys handling giving out the candy?
It's a mixture of both. You know, we do the variety packs, but we also do some of the king size stuff as well. And so I want everybody to have a good time, and I want everybody to get everything they want. So I try to keep it mixing it up every year and as many options as possible.
All right. So I have six candies that I want to go through with you really quickly. I want you to tell me if you would give these candies a thumbs up or a thumbs down and why you feel that way. Let's start with gummy bears. Where are you at?
Yeah, I can do gummy bears. Just depends, you know. But it's not my favorite, but I can do it for sure.
All right, where are you at with a York peppermint patty?
That's a thumbs down for me. I'm not a big peppermint fan.
How about Whoppers? You know those like little chocolate milk balls? I like them, but they're very controversial. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Yeah, if it's the only option I had, I'd give it a thumbs up.
Candy corn.
Definitely. I actually had this discussion the other day with some guys. It's like only Halloween once or twice, thumbs up, rest of the year, thumbs down.
All right, two final candies here. First up, lemon heads.
That's a thumbs down for me.
Last one, yellow starburst.
You got to eat the yellow starburst to appreciate the red and the pink. So, I mean, you got to eat the yellow and the orange. So, you got to give it a thumbs up. It's not as good as the other ones, but it plays its part.
Right now, we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. Let's take a look back really quickly before we move on to you guys' game on Sunday against the Bills. You guys started this homestand under 500 with a very important Sunday night football game against the Lions. You guys had an incredible homestand. You guys outscored your opponents 89-24. What are you most proud of? What was the most impressive for you, given how you guys played this homestand?
Yeah, I think it's just the progression of getting better and better, offense and defense and special teams, everybody. It just got better while we were at home, and we had Arrowhead on our side, and so we have to continue that. You know, we played some good football teams, and we've gotten better as the season's going on, but we're going to have a nice stretch of games starting off with Buffalo, and it's going to be a tough environment. So we got to continue to get better and try to find a way to win this game in a tough environment.
One thing that you told me a couple of weeks ago when we were having a conversation was about the wide receiver room and how much guys really like each other. I've been really paying attention to that, and you can just get a sense of it, man. Guys really like playing for each other. Guys like seeing other guys have success. It feels like the camaraderie is very high right now amongst the team. It feels like the chemistry and confidence is also very high amongst the team as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it speaks to just the culture that we've kind of built here, and guys like each other and they want to go out there and win. And they want everybody to succeed. And so that's not going to happen every single game that everybody's going to get all the catches or all the yards or whatever it is. But I think if you just play your part and you get yourself open whenever you get the opportunities, the football's going to come your way. And then you'll be able to go out there and make an impact in the game.
You can't really call anything automatic, but it feels like Kareem Hunt on third and short or fourth and short, it's become as almost as automatic as anything in the league right now.
Yeah, no, he's doing a great job, man. I mean, he does a great job of finding the soft spots in the run and getting through there and getting the yards. You know, that's not an easy thing to do, and I think it's a weapon that we have is having him in those situations. And the offensive line's doing a great job giving him space to run with.
I also feel like that's just changed some of the philosophy amongst the team. One thing we were talking about on the show yesterday was, you know, you guys had 4th and 1 from your side of the field. I feel like in years past, you guys potentially punt in that situation. It didn't feel like there was any hesitation. It felt like everybody had a lot of confidence in that offensive line and also Kareem to pick up the 1 or 2 yards.
100%. And I said this after the game. I mean, it's confidence in Kareem in the offensive line, and it's also confidence in our defense that they're going to get stops if it doesn't work out. And so I think it speaks to the confidence of the entire team and the coaches have in us that we're going to go out there and make it happen. And if the slight chance that we don't, the defense is going to get the stop and get the ball right back to us.
Right now, we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. I got to ask you about Travis. He ties the record. Very special moment at Arrowhead. How cool is it to see him have that moment? And you talk about the hard work that guys put in. This is the guy that's been doing it for a decade now.
100%, man. I mean, he comes to work every single day with the right attitude, and one of the main leaders, if not the leader of this football team. And he's a guy that practices harder than anybody, has a smile on his face, keeping guys motivated and ready to go. And so he's deserving of having these type of records broken, and that comes with the work that he puts in every single day.
Let's move ahead to Sunday's matchup against the Buffalo Bills. This is the 10th time that you guys will have played the Bills. It just feels like every year this game always means a whole lot. It's always really important, and it usually feels like it's around this time in the calendar.
Yeah, it is. It's always like late October, early November when we play, and it's kind of the season's rolling, and you know where everybody's kind of at in the standings and everything like that. And so we know it's going to take our best effort. I think that's what I've learned about every single matchup that we have is it always comes down to the end, and it's two great football teams going up against each other, and it's going to be one play here or there. It's going to change the outcome. And so it's just about making those plays, staying motivated, staying up to the task, and going out there and playing your best football at the right time and making those big plays in the big moments.
I'm sure you've heard this comparison a million times, but, you know, you and I are from the same era of watching football. You know, every year you circled Brady against Manning, and you knew whether it was Patriots-Colts or Patriots-Broncos, you knew how important that matchup was going to be. How cool is it to kind of grow up watching that rivalry and now essentially be in the middle of your own version of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool just being able to be in these big games and playing against the best of the best at quarterback and at teams. And so, I mean, it speaks to the work that both organizations have put in every single year to be in these big games year after year. And I think it just it speaks to the people that are in each building. So it's been a lot of fun, man. I mean, go up and playing in these big football games against these top tier quarterbacks, and having a friendship with Josh as well. It's cool to be able to go up there and know that he's going to play his best football in the big moments, and I plan on trying to do the same.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. You know, what's the relationship like between you and Josh? Because it appears you guys are very friendly, but there's also a rivalry there. You want to beat him, he wants to beat you. What's the relationship like? What's the rivalry like between you and Josh Allen?
Yeah, I mean, I think off the field, I mean, I respect the way he plays the game and the way he handles himself. And so I think off the field, we kind of have similarities as far as being interested in golf and being interested in just being around our family and competing and just being good people. And so I think that kind of tends itself to have a friendship as far as golf and stuff like that. But I mean, I know just like me, he's as competitive as ever. So when we get on the football field, it's all about going out there and finding a way to win for the football team. And so it's definitely a friendship that on game days is not a lot of talking. It's about going out there and competing.
We've talked about this before. You know, you're a part of a big three with you, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson. It feels like you guys push each other. You got a couple of MVPs. Lamar has a couple of MVPs. Josh Allen has an MVP. It feels like you guys really push each other to bring the best out of one another.
Yeah, I think that's just the quarterback position these days. I mean, there's so many great quarterbacks. I mean, you see it every Sunday of all the guys that are around the league making plays happen. And you want to push yourself to be even better. And you know if you don't, you're going to get passed up by these other guys. And it takes your best effort every single week. And so, I mean, Josh and Lamar have kind of been those guys that have pushed me every step of the way, being here the longest kind of with me. But at the same time, man, these young guys are coming hungry as ever. So it's going to take – all of us to keep playing our best football to try to stay on top.
I think a lot of people, if you ask them, you know, what's their memory from this rivalry, a lot of people would say the 13-second game at Arrowhead. When I think of this rivalry, I think of when you guys went on the road in the playoffs a couple of years ago. Up to that point, you hadn't played a road playoff game. There were those conversations of what is this team going to look like. You guys go on the road and you get the tough win, and then it's that image of you running off the field, and fans are just throwing snowballs at you.
Yeah, no, the fan bases are passionate for sure. I think it's for me, I like that one more just because we won the Super Bowl that year in the 13-second game. We lose the next game, so I think it's been a lot of great games, and even the games that we've lost have come down to the very end. And I think it's a great rivalry, and we just go out there and know, like I said, it's take our best football, and you're going to have memories after the game. Just hopefully they're good ones.
You just mentioned it. Where would you kind of rank the fan? I don't know if animosity is the correct term, but certainly you're not very popular there for understandable reasons. Where does it kind of rank with some of the other visiting stadiums you go into?
No, it's up there. They definitely don't like me or the Kansas City Chiefs, but I mean, I love it. I mean, I love that, like, they're that passionate about their fans, their team, and that's what you want in sports, man. And you want to keep it hostile, but at the same time safe. But at the same time, I mean, you want it to be a great environment and a great atmosphere. And you know, going up to Buffalo, you're gonna get a great one. And now it's about going out there and kind of bonding together with your teammates. And going out there and trying to find a way to win.
Last two things here. Kansas City, they love their tailgating. I don't know if anybody loves tailgating more than Buffalo. You got to be on a different level to try to pile drive somebody through a table.
Yeah, I've never tried to do it, and I don't plan on it, but it looks like it's fun for those guys. So, I mean, they can keep doing it. It's part of their tradition.
And last thing here, you're a baseball guy. We had an 18-inning baseball game. What's the longest baseball game you've been in?
Man, I couldn't even tell you, but 18's a lot of innings. I try to stay up after the game. You know, I got my adrenaline pumping, and I get after the game. It's the ninth inning, and I turn it on, and I'm watching it kind of in the locker room, and then all of a sudden I go home, and it's the 11th inning, and I stayed up to I was mad. I stayed up to like 1-something in the morning to the 17th inning and just passed out, fell asleep, and of course Freddie Freeman hits a walk-off in the 18th, so I missed the walk-off, even though I tried to stay up for it. But it's been a great series, 2-2, and they're still in L.A., and then they'll have to go back to Toronto. It's been a great, great series to watch.
That is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, joining us on the show today as we get you ready for one of the most anticipated games of the regular season, the Chiefs and the Bills. Patrick, great luck, man. We'll catch up with you after the bye week.
Yeah, appreciate you.
That was Patrick Mahomes talking with our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City, the weekly conversation with the Chiefs quarterback that we're able to play for you. Again, the Chiefs and the Bills this Sunday, huge game. That could be a preview of the AFC Championship, 3:25 kickoff right here on KMOX. We will take another break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the program. You are locked in to a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it for just a couple more minutes here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX, wrapping things up for the night. We do have a short show tomorrow. We're going to be done early for Thursday night football. The Thursday night matchup coming up tomorrow evening is going to be the Baltimore Ravens in Miami to take on the Dolphins. Wanted to mention this very quickly. We had Chaim Bloom on this past Sunday, as he is always on Sports on a Sunday morning. He'll be back on with Tom coming up this Sunday, but it gained a little bit of traction from a kind of from a news standpoint about what he had to say about the timeline for Lars Nootbaar returning from the injury. He had the surgery to alleviate some of the pain in his heels. Well, advancing that story, Derek Gould wrote about it in the Post-Dispatch and at STL Today, and he talked to Nootbaar, and I would encourage you to read the story, but just sort of an update on where this whole thing is at. I thought it was interesting. Nootbaar was a little bit surprised by the fact that he needed surgery after he went to New York to meet with a doctor. And also, this is where it's a little bit frustrating because it really was not talked about at all that Nootbaar was dealing with pain in his feet, pain in his heels. And Nootbaar told Derek Gould that he had been dealing with this for a while and didn't really know what it was, but it was impacting his ability to do things. So from an athletic standpoint, I think we all know it all starts in the lower body and it starts in the feet. So if you've got pain in your feet, if your feet are not allowing you to do things, that's going to transfer to your entire body. I'm not going to sit here and I was very disappointed with Lars Nootbaar's performance this year. Could have it been impacted by this pain in the feet all year long or through the second half of the season, however long? Yeah, it could have been. Could have it not been? Could have this just kind of been who Newt Barr is? Like, I want to make it clear, I'm not sitting here making an excuse for him. I'm not sitting here and saying this is why the season went the way that it went. But I do think we need to present it as a possibility. Because as much people don't like to hear about the StatCast numbers and all those sort of things, Newt Barr still does some things, has some abilities where if he ever puts it all together, he can be a big-time, dynamic baseball player. And where we have discussed the idea of trading Lars Newt Barr, and before the surgery and everything, I honestly thought that Newt Barr was likely to get moved. Now I don't think he is. I think he's likely with the team when spring training gets underway and when the season gets started. But if, it's a big if, and he's dealt with so many different injuries, there's no guarantee on anything. But if it was the foot issue, the heels, that really impacted him from a negative standpoint this year, and some of those advanced numbers, some of those StatCast numbers that we talk about, they actually fell back a little bit this year. If that could be attributed to the feet, it's a reason to have at least a sliver of hope that things could look better for Newt Barr moving forward. Because, again, based off what Newt Barr said to Derek Gould, and I encourage you to read it in the Post-Dispatch and at stltoday.com, this is something that he's been dealing with for a while, been working with trainers, and then finally he went and saw a doctor, and that's when they had the surgery. He's evidently, rehab's going well. He's using crutches to walk right now, but it sounds like things are going well for him, and all we can do is sit back and wait and see how this might impact him moving forward. That's it for the show. This is a fun show tonight. Thank you so much for being tuned in. Again, short show tomorrow. We'll do Rush Hour Sports during the 5 o'clock hour, and then I'll have you for a half hour after that, leading into Thursday Night Football. Have a great rest of your Wednesday night. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. This has been a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.